I'm Victor Brick. I'm the CEO and founder of Planet Fitness Growth Partners, LLC, which is the largest privately held Planet Fitness franchise in the Planet Fitness system, and co-founder, actually, with my wife, of both Planet Fitness Growth Partners and of the John W. Brick Mental Health Foundation, whose mission is to do nothing less than change the way the world treats mental health.
Now, you started the John W. Brick Mental Health Foundation in honor of your brother. Your brother, John, struggled with mental illness. Can you tell me a little bit about him?
John was my hero. He was my oldest brother, and he was one of the most talented people I've ever met in my life. Yet he was plagued by this thing called mental illness, and it was as if a black cloud followed him around and affected him no matter where he went and no matter what he did. And his form of mental illness was schizophrenia. And at first, my parents tried everything to help. He was considered maladjusted and hyperactive and all these things, but they never really clinically diagnosed till his early teens. Now, we're talking the late 50s and early 60s, and it was just so terrible to see him, such a tortured individual, such a talented and loving person, being so tortured. The way that they treated him was the traditional way at the time, the conventional way, which unfortunately still exists today, and that is medication, institutionalization, and psychoanalysis. And my brother got into this vicious cycle where he would, after they diagnosed him as having schizophrenia, they'd get him on different medications, and he would take the medication. It would make him feel good mentally. He would get lucid, but it would make him feel so bad physically, and he would realize what it was doing to him physically, and he was a good athlete, very active guy. So he would get off his medication. Then, of course, he would go into that spiral and begin to become psychotic. And then at times, he would literally disappear and become homeless on the streets of D.C. And my mother would call me. I lived in Baltimore at the time, crying, "Will you please go find your brother?" And I'd get in the car and drive down. And I knew his haunts. I knew where he would hang out when he would have these episodes. And sometimes, thank God, but somehow, by the grace of God, I would find him and we'd bring him back and have to hospitalize him, and the cycle went on for years. And finally, he got to where he was manageable, my parents had moved to Florida by then. We put him in a trailer park near my parents' home, because we were afraid at times he would get violent and could be a harm to himself and others. Fortunately, at the end, he subsided as he got a little older. But the bottom line was that his mind and body began to fail, and he began to just be haunted by demons. And he thought that he was being punished for his sins. I mean, how else could he be in such a terrible way? And so he started doing penance, and he started eliminating all modern appliances from his life. First he stopped driving, and then he stopped using the phone and the radio and the TV. And finally, now this is Florida, the middle of summer, he stopped using the air conditioning. When my dad found him in the floor of that trailer park when he went to see him, because he hadn't heard from him for a while, he was 110 degrees. So in essence, schizophrenia is not terminal. It was what the medication had done to him. And I was convinced as I got more into health, I just realized, and fitness, because I'm in health and fitness, of course, there's got to be a better way to treat mental illness and promote mental wellness. Physical fitness and health are all about preventive. It's what you call upstream interventions. It's so you don't get sick. It's wellness, not illness. And that's how we have to approach mental health. And there's got to be mental health and mental wellness, not mental illness. Even my brother John, with his condition, did not have to become ill. Schizophrenics can flourish even though they have that illness, just like you can have a propensity for cancer, but you live right, you take care of yourself, you dramatically reduce the likelihood that it will manifest itself. And that's my brother John. I hope you can tell. I mean, I'm literally getting emotional talking about it. I had three brothers, and we all take the fleas, and John was the oldest. And when he passed, and now this is the most talented, loving person you'd ever want to meet. I mean, he literally was a genius. At his funeral, the only people there were the immediate family. And there was my mother, and she's my mom's from the Philippines and very bad Catholic, and she's dressed in her black with that lace on and just in the front row. And there's like five people in the church for her only, for her oldest son. And I said, this is not the way my brother's going to go out. They're going to remember John Brick. He was meant for greatness. And in some ways, his passing may be the catalyst for a paradigm shift in the way people treat mental health through the John W. Brick Mental Health Foundation. So that's what I'm committed to, and that's what the foundation is all about.
On your website, I saw a picture of the four brothers, and I think it was the one taken on the tennis court. You guys were in your tennis togs. It looked like four promising brothers with the world is their oyster, you know? I can relate a little bit. Growing up in our family, we had an uncle who came back from World War II, and they called it shell shock.
Right.
But he was later, I guess it was PTSD.
Right. Right.
But he was also schizophrenic. The whole family would try to help him, and he would go homeless and go missing. And so I understand what you're going through to a certain extent. But do you think that the stigma, the fear surrounding it is lifting a little bit with organizations like yours and with people focusing on mental illness?
100%. My foundation is not focused on, quote, lifting the stigma of mental health. That's been done.
Yes.
I don't know too many people that are ashamed to say my son has mental health issues and ashamed to seek treatment. That used to be the case. The problem is when they seek treatment, they're getting the wrong treatment. But the stigma, you look at you are on your show, of course, nonetheless, national radio talking about mental illness in your family, as am I. People are doing it. NBA players are coming out and speaking about it. Kevin Love is doing it. Michael Phelps, the most successful. Yes. And a Baltimore boy, but the most successful of all time, has spoke about now. People are doing it all the time now. But it's kind of like government and kind of like poverty and kind of like a lot of this stuff. Everybody's talking about it, but who's doing anything about it?
I know.
And saying there's this big problem of mental health in the society. We've got to be more aware. We've got to be more understanding. Those are all platitudes. Let's get some programs. Let's get some protocols. Let's get a united effort in the medical community to realize that there is something more to treating mental health than drugs. I sit on the board of a major hospital. As a matter of fact, it's one of the leading mental institutions in the world. And we had a board meeting, and we were talking about what we were going to do with the $11 billion they had just raised for research. All four programs they mentioned were clinical trials for new drugs. All four. There was a two-hour conversation, and the only person, there was two people that talked about salutogenic processes, salutogenic being holistic lifestyle.
Yes.
The only two people in the entire meeting that mentioned those at all, and only for like 3 minutes, was Lynn, my wife, and myself. I'm one of these guys that I'll throw hand grenades at things, and then I'll jump in after the hand grenade. You know, so I don't just throw an idea and walk away. So I've got so immersed into the mental health field that I'm on the Global Wellness Summit. I'm on the Mental Wellness Initiative of the Global Wellness Institute. Those are two of the biggest wellness associations in the world.
You do have a report on the impact of the John W. Brick Foundation has a report on the impact of exercise and movement on mental health. Now, what is new in that report?
The John W. Brick wants to change the way the world treats mental health. And we want to do that by having salutogenic processes, such as exercise, nutrition, and mind-body fact, except integrated as a essential part. And the word essential is so critical now, because that's what governments are using when they close businesses, as an essential part of the treatment of mental illness and the promotion of mental wellness. So we want to get those processes accepted and integrated as part of the treatment. We do that three ways. One is we fund research, major research. Two, we create programs and services in the treatment of mental health. And three, we serve as a collaborative hub where we assimilate information, we catalog it, and then we make it available and we promote it. And we also work with other agencies like the Never Alone Summit, which we'll talk about in a minute, in the promotion of mental health. What you're referring to is the two things. One, this catalog of all research we've done, 4,000 research papers, all peer reviewed. We don't review anything that's not peer reviewed.
Yes.
Research that we're in the middle of, and we haven't concluded it because it's a 2-year study. And that's one of the problems with most of the research we found. They were unfortunately short term studies, 6 weeks, 3 months. So that's what we're trying to do. Mm-hmm. We're trying to show how exercise and movement benefits depressive symptoms. You got to be careful about saying helps depressive. And so we're doing it by measuring three forms of exercise. The first is the Wim Hof method of exercise. So Wim Hof's the Iceman with cold breathing, the cold treatment, and the deep breathing, holding your breath. So we've got one group doing that. We've got one group doing meditation. And we've got one, and when I say group, 50 people, 150 total, but 50 in each group. That's the other problem with most of the studies that we research. they'd have 6 or 12 or 18 people. You know, we didn't think it was a representative sample. So we're doing a large scale, a long-term, large population study, Wim Hof method, meditation, and high-intensity interval training. And the other thing is that it's science-based. Well, how is it science/evidence-based? We're using biomarkers. So your CRP less? Is your C-reactive protein less? Did your vagus nerve respond better? We're measuring biomarkers, and I'm not a researcher, so I don't know all the biomarkers. But as I said, it's a gold standard study that we think is going to be a landmark study, how the body responds to positive stress.
Can we find a write-up on what the report so far has been saying?
No, and that's one of the problems with research. You can't publish anything until it's done. But that's how you keep it untainted.
How, though, could you, going back to beautiful John, how could you have gotten John to pick up his tennis racket again or do some meditation in the morning? I mean, it's hard enough to get some of these people to take their meds, let alone go out for a run.
Yeah. And that's the thing is, and everything sounds good in theory, but how do you put it in practice? John needed a fully integrated program that combined both the traditional medical. He needed medication. He needed at times he needed psychoanalysis, and at times he needed institutionalization. I think we could have gotten away from the institutionalization. Make no mistake about it. I am not anti-medication. I'm not one of these guys that you can cure cancer by medication.
Exactly.
There are times that Western science and medicine is essential. But John should have been on a specific diet. Which diet? I couldn't have told you. John should have been on a specific exercise program. We were all athletes. Everyone has played college sports. John probably over-exercised. It probably put too much stress on him. That's the thing. That's the thing about positive stress. Yeah. Positive stress is just that, positive. The body needs positive stress. If you wear a coat in the middle of the summer and bundle up, you are going to catch a cold as soon as the weather turns. You've got to expose, that's all Wim Hof. You've got to expose yourself to the temperatures. I go as long as I can in the winter. Now I live in Florida now, but I used to live in Baltimore. I'd go as long as I can in the winters without wearing a coat, and I'd usually get through a whole winter without wearing a coat.
Oh my goodness. Because
my body would adjust to it. Body can adjust. So don't medicate a guy at the first sign of anxiousness. At the same time, if I were to be in Poland not wearing a coat, I'd be froze to death. So if a person has anxiousness and nervousness and all these manifestations that John had, he probably should be in a sport that you're not keeping score. He should be in a Planet Fitness as opposed to some of the types of clubs you and I were talking about earlier. Everyone needs a support group, and they need to be educated. Yes. And the education shouldn't be, John, take your medicine, John, take. All of our conversations with John was taking your medication. Nobody ever said to John, let's go for a walk in the forest. John, when John was growing up, he probably should have had a pet. And now I'm throwing these ideas out, but remember, we're doing research on all this stuff. And for every one of these ideas that's substantiated, there's somebody that says, well, it hadn't fully been proven. And unfortunately, for a great extent, they're correct. But philosophically, you know, of course, that pets are phenomenal for well-being. Yes. As a young boy, John probably should have had a pet. And again, I'm just throwing this out there, all these things that now people are doing. John should have been doing all of those. Supplementation, for sure. John never took supplementation.
You make so much sense. You're saying that, and of course, once we have the numbers and the biomarker evidence to back this up, maybe exercise should be prescribed for certain things, just the way
100%.
Yeah, just the way physical therapy is prescribed for injuries. What do you think is stopping that from happening in healthcare today?
One is fear, and fear that going out on a limb and saying that something works when you're not 100% sure it works, so you don't want to be the first. The second is, of course, the financial driver, which is push the meds. Unfortunately, even in the medical community, they make a lot more money when people are sick than when people are healthy. Now, you think of this. You're a therapist or counselor. How do you get paid? You get paid when a person comes and sees you. So is it to your benefit to make that person healthy or to maintain him as a client for 20 years? And the answer is maintain them for 20 years. And you ask some of your friends how long they've been seeing their therapist. But if you were to grade them on curing their people they're seeing, in other words, they didn't no longer had to see them. cure rate 7%. It's just an ongoing cycle. And it would be different if, well, come see me once, go from once a week to once a month. They just keep coming and coming.
Victor,
so the motivation, the financial motivation.
Victor, if I may, there are programs, though, that seem to be sort of leaning into what you're saying. I'm thinking of Silver Sneakers.
100%.
If you could describe for our listeners what Silver Sneakers is.
Silver Sneakers is a insurance program that motivates people to exercise by finding health clubs that mm-hmm. will provide the specific programs for these groups. And yep. in our case, a lot of them are either deconditioned or elderly. The insurance company reimburses per visit. So it's to our advantage to make sure that the people come and they're incentivized to come because it's paid every time they come. But the point is that insurance companies realize better to pay a couple of dollars to keep the person healthy than tens of thousands of dollars once they get sick. And the insurance industry could be the key to all of this because, as I said, as you know, finances are such a big driver. And economically, it's just so much more practical to preventive.
It's a start. Wouldn't you agree? Yeah. I mean, it's a sort of
100%.
Moving in the right direction anyway.
And there are many things that are moving in the right direction. And that's why the foundation is really starting to get so much traction. It's an idea whose time has come.
Oh, I agree 100%. Now, let's segue into talking about the Never Alone Summit. Whoever came up with that, was that your wife's idea? The Never Alone Summit.
It's actually the Never Alone name is actually from the Chopra Foundation because we're partnering with Deepak Chopra. So they have a Never Alone mm-hmm. organization, and we partnered with them because we have a relationship with Deepak personally. Remember what I said, that's one of the three pillars of the John W. Brick funding. We already talked about the funding. We've talked somewhat about the programs and the fact that we're starting to develop them based on the research, but the funding of the research. And then the third is the collaborative hub. This is a collaborative effort between the Deepak Chopra Foundation, and the John W. Brick Mental Health Foundation. So we've gone from this little local Baltimore foundation that was doing races to raise a couple of thousand dollars to putting on an international weekend mental wellness day. Last year was a weekend, but today, this year it's a day with the Chopra Foundation. So I'd say we're starting to gain a little traction.
Now, so it's a free virtual event, and you have it slated this year for May 21st, 2021. What is the summit about?
Well, the summit is about education. It's education, motivation, inspiration. It will have a series of speakers. Think of it as a all-day TED Talk. The talks are a little shorter than TED Talks. TED Talks usually go for 18 minutes, I think. And half of the talks are about mental health. And then half of the presentations are about program side, what you can do about it. Exactly what you said. You're a very good interviewer, by the way, because the theory's great, but what can you do? So we have people like Dr. Richard Carmona, who's the 17th U.S. Surgeon General, talking about mental health and the pandemic and symptoms and why it's so important now. And we have Deepak, of course, talking about the need for programs. And then, of course, the benefits of meditation. We have Russell Brand, who's a comedian and an author, and singer Jewel, who'll be talking about her own experience, and that's the inspirational part. And
that's a great
Patrick
lineup.
Kennedy,
you have a great lineup.
Patrick Kennedy, and then we've got this brother tandem out of Baltimore that started this program for disadvantaged communities where they're doing meditation in the morning, among other things. They're doing meditation in the morning with school kids, so they start to change the psyche of an inner city kid or disadvantaged community kid from I can, going from a negative attitude to a positive attitude. So I think that's another inspirational part. And there'll be people talking about forest bathing. And I think Wim Hof will be on it again. Specific things you can do or you could help others do as well.
How do we find out more about the program?
You can go to the John W. Brick Foundation.org. And we have all the information there. You can also go to neveralonesummit.live to register. neveralonesummit.live.
You are so easy to talk to and so fascinating. But as we wrap up our chat today, what would you like to leave with our listeners?
What I would like to leave with our listeners, every time you walk by a homeless person, every time you see somebody that you think, who is that guy? That could be your brother. That was my brother. That could be you. You could be perfectly happy today and something could change your life, like with your uncle, and that could be you. Those people need our help, and they don't need a dollar in the cup, and they don't need a bag of McDonald's. They need programs and services to get them from going from languishing to flourishing. And I've built a pretty big business. I mean, I'm pretty big news in the fitness industry. Nobody's going to remember what I built in the fitness industry, but they will remember the John W. Brick Mental Health Foundation. What are they going to remember for you? What dent are you going to put in the universe? And will you help us put a dent in the universe for mental health?
Wow, I'm in tears. That was well said.
I am in tears too. And I thought of that just when you asked the question. I always speak from the heart. And it's the best way. And that was from the heart, off the cuff, what you just said, and I am in tears. Because that was.
Well, amen, Victor. That was very well said. By the way, thank you so much for taking the time today. I know you are a busy guy, and this was such a worthwhile chat, I thought.
I drop everything for any time anybody wants to talk about mental health and the John W. Brick Mental Health.